Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace coming at you for this final hour. Willie Donick here up in Buffalo. Derek Mason back at the studios. And we are excited about what we've got coming ahead here. We'll get back into some football talk later. We'll touch on the Predators matchup tonight against the Buffalo Sabres from where I sit. But, of course, it's March Madness, and we've got some great games coming up. Vanderbilt's in the NIT against UAB on Wednesday. Florida Atlantic plays Tennessee in the Sweet 16 on Thursday. So we thought, let's get some added perspective. Who's right in the middle of all that? Middle Tennessee basketball. They had a really good year this year, 19-14. They beat both UAB and Florida Atlantic, and their coach, Nick McDevitt, is on the line with us. Coach, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So, Coach, before we get into maybe a little scouting report to pick your brain on what fans are going to see in these next couple of nights, give us a quick update on your program. I know from the time that you got in there, you had to build it slowly. Your last 2 years have been outstanding. And, you know, it just shows you how incredible these conference tournaments can be, because you guys were just within a play here or play there of maybe getting to the big dance, but you've made huge progress.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. We obviously have had, two good back-to-back seasons. Last year, winning 26 games and, winning the Conference USA East Division, getting to the finals of the CBI. And then again this year, having won 19 games and got invited to the CBI again. Had to turn that down, unfortunately, due to just too many guys on our roster that were really banged up at the end of the year. Not sure how many would have been able to play either in that or the NCAA tournament with some of the nicks and bruises that we had. But, finished strong and had a chance, as you just mentioned there, down the stretch in that semifinal game against FAU. Had the ball baseline out of bounds, down one with under 10 seconds left, and just came up a little bit short there. But all in all, had a good year, beat a top 25 team in FAU at home. We're able to win our MTE up in Canada, get some quality opponents. So had some good moments, and looking forward to next year and continuing to build it.
And so tell us what your thoughts are. We know everything's so fluid, it seems like, in college basketball with the ability for kids to transfer and all that stuff, but it looks like you built a pretty good foundation. What do you see ahead for your squad?
Well, you just brought up some of the key ingredients or key points, I should say, moving forward, is we do have a really good foundation of returning players. And now also, though, with the transfer portal, it's just it's so prevalent. And last year there were 1,770 Division I transfers, and that's amongst 363 schools. So you're talking almost five per school. This year, with still so many players that were in college during COVID and all those players having that extra year of eligibility, the grad transfer number is so high. There are just so many young men that have been in college 4 years, got another year of eligibility left, and so they're able to transfer and get immediate eligibility, and that's even if they've already transferred once. And so I think this year you'll see that number continue to increase. It's increased for about 8 or 9 years in a row, just continues to tick up. And I think it'll be closer to 2,000 this year. And when you think about that, you're talking about on average about 5.5 to 6 transfers per Division I school out there. So your program will obviously remain very fluid, at least for the next few years, and that you want to make sure that the foundation, the base, your core is a strong group of guys, because it'll be an anomaly if you had, like we had last year, we had no one transfer out, which was crazy. We were one of only 2 or 3 programs in the country that could say that. So the norm is going to be that you just got to anticipate you're going to lose some players to the transfer portal, but at the same time, you're going to be able to add some really good players to the transfer portal as well. When you think about that large of a number of prospects out there, along with high school and junior college prospects, there's really a lot of players out there that can help your team.
Wow, all those numbers, man. My head's spinning. That's a different kind of March Madness, for sure.
It is. That's a good way to say it. That's a totally different perspective to March Madness. And it can be madness, but it's part of it.
Well, let's ask about it because I'm sure there's a lot of Tennessee fans that are probably sitting there, wow, get to play Florida Atlantic, not having to play Purdue or somebody like that. But Florida Atlantic sitting there at 33-3, they lost three all year. You guys beat them once, almost beat them again in that conference tournament. We were watching those final minutes, and one bounce here and there could have made the difference in that one. So tell us about Florida Atlantic and what Tennessee fans might expect.
Well, they're really good on the offensive side of the ball. They play pretty much a four-guard lineup with two big bigs. Vladimir Goldin, their starting center, is about 7'1", 235, 240. Giancarlo Rosato is a little bit shorter in terms, 6'8", but he's probably about 250 pounds and really skilled. Soft hands, soft feet. So those guards really play well off of those guys. They do a lot of pick and roll stuff. They try to drive you off the bounce and just really spread your team out, spread you out defensively. And they've got seven players that shoot between 33 and 41% from three. Their two point guards, Brian Greenley and Jalen Gaffney, are 2.5-to-1 assist to turnover ratio guys each. Both when we played them in the semifinals were around like 160, 165 assists each to about 60 or 65 turnovers. And when you think about having multiple guys out on the floor at times, and at least one that take that good care of the ball, and they're surrounded by big fives rolling to the basket and really terrific shooters out on the perimeter, it just makes them hard to defend. They're smaller than most teams because of playing that four-guard lineup. So at the three and the four spot, there's times where they're 6'2 and 6'3 at those spots, but they really force you to come out and defend them on the perimeter. And on the other end, they really just don't get beat up on the glass like you think they might because of playing a smaller lineup. They were actually one of the better rebounding teams in our league. So their lack of size, per se, at the one through four spots didn't prove to be something that hurt them just because on the other end, they're getting threes. You might try to take advantage of them on the block, but you're getting twos. And on the other end, they're spreading and driving you and scoring threes. So they're tough to guard, and it'll be an interesting matchup. And to me, it's kind of strength on strength watching Tennessee's defense the other day against Duke. I'm excited to watch how they defend FAU's offense.
We'll talk with Nick McDevitt, MTSU's head men's basketball coach. Now, Coach, another team that you face that's now in the NIT, and they're going up against Vanderbilt this upcoming week, is UAB. Give us a scouting report on UAB.
Man, they are really talented. I would tell you that. They've got a multitude of Power 5 transfers. They're big. They're physical. They're aggressive. They score about half of their points. When we play, it was about 40% on offensive rebounds and getting to the free throw line. They are really good at just downhill drives. They're great bodies, a multitude, again, of 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guys at that 3-4 spot that aren't going to settle for long jumpers. They're going to put pressure on you by trying to get downhill, and then they really go get on the glass. Trey Jemison is a mountain of a man. I mean, he's really big. He's athletic. I mean, you've got your hands cut out for you with him, transfer from Clemson. And then, he's 6'11", 260. Well, they sub in 6'10", 250, Javion Davis, who's a transfer from Mississippi State, and they just really get on the glass. K.J. Buff and Ty Brewer are big athletic fours. And they don't rely, it's like watching, it's the opposite of what you would think when you're watching FAU, who's more skill and perimeter oriented and getting points from the three-point line. Man, you play them a couple days later, and it is a very different game. And you've really got to be able to rebound with those two guys, with that team. And the two guys that make them go are Jordan Walker and Eric Gaines. Walker is a 5'10 guard that has been first team all league, last year's player of the year in our league. He is dynamic. He's had a handful of games where he's 30 plus and 40 plus scoring wise, and can really get hot and fill it up. So it'll be interesting to watch those guys and Vandy here in the next day or so.
Now, coach,
now teammates, you know, I like to shoot threes.
Yes,
right. I like to get the ball up. I like to have the green light. Jordan Walker, 333 three-point attempts on the air. So I would say, coach, he's got the green light.
He has a neon green light. It's ultra neon green. I mean, he was averaging like four makes, not four attempts, but was averaging about four makes and about 11 attempts from three per game. And he puts so much pressure on him because he makes them from like 7-8 feet behind the line. So he really stretches you out. And then when you get out there, he's not just a standstill spot up shooter. He's quick. He's fast. And so if you switch out on him, or if your post players are trying to hard hedge ball screens, you better get that coverage right, or he's in the lane. If you're too soft on it, he's making those shots. And so he by himself stretches the defense out, and you've got to get coverages and rotations right, or you've got he and Eric Gaines, who are athletic guys that can get downhill, and the other guys just play volleyball in the glass if you can't rebound with them.
Now, Coach, I'm looking at, Coach Stackhouse and his progression since he's been at Vandy, and then your progression there at MTSU. Both of you sort of struggle early on, but now it seems that you've gotten your footing with the division. You've gotten the players that you want to continue to build your programs. Is it a little bit more difficult because of the transfers and people are in and out to build your program as quickly as you want to?
I think you can build it quickly or
sustain
quicker.
It.
You know, yeah, that's the hard part, mm-hmm. is the sustaining it. You know, used to you could – a fan could, a coach could. You're looking at your roster and you're saying, okay, here's the freshmen. They'll be sophomores this year. They'll be juniors by this year. So we need to be recruiting a guy that's a high school junior and a high school senior for that position for this year. And that's just not really the case in modern-day college basketball as much as it used to be. The good side of that, because of guys, all of a sudden, he's finishing his sophomore year with you, and he transfers out. And so now he's not a junior in your program the next year. So it makes that difficult. But, however, there's so many guys that are in the transfer portal, and now a large majority are immediately eligible. And that was really the biggest thing a couple of years ago that just wasn't the case. At that time, you still had to sit out, even if it was your first transfer. So you look at our roster, we've got a lot of guys like Jalen Jordan or DeAndre Dishman, or at that time there were C.J. Jones, Jordan Davis, several guys that were starters for us when they became eligible, but their initial year here, they had to sit out. And now those same guys, because for those young men that I just mentioned, transferring here to Middle Tennessee was their first time transferring. Well, under current rules, those guys are immediately eligible. And so you can quickly get impact players on your roster. Now, to your point, you can just as quickly lose those impact players. And so that's why I think you can see the pendulum swing back and forth, where all of a sudden you lose some impact players, and you just miss on a couple that came in. Maybe they just didn't quite have the talent or the skill or the size that you thought they would have and can't quite help you. And you go from a really good year to an okay year. But you can also do the opposite in a hurry. You can have an okay year or subpar year, and then you hit on the right three or four guys in the portal or a couple of high school kids that perhaps just surprise you in a good way. And now you see it swing the other direction. I think it'll be less and less going forward where you see that slow, steady climb or the slow, steady decline. You can see some big swings back and forth depending on really your success level in retaining your players, but also what happens to your program in the portal.
Well, Coach, we really appreciate the insight. Keep building. Keep doing what you're doing. It's been exciting to watch you guys rise up here, and I know you guys will be talking about – we'll talk to another coach about how to break down you guys, hopefully, while you guys are playing in the tournament.
I like the sounds of that. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot for your time today, and good luck down the road. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yep.
All right, that's Nick McDevitt, head coach, Middle Tennessee Blue Raiders, 19-14, solid, solid season for a second year in a row. Just giving us a little insight on what we're going to see the next couple of nights. UAB at Memorial Gym, 27 wins. Tough, tough game for Vanderbilt. Don't sleep on the Blazers. And then Florida Atlantic, 33-3, taking on UT in the Sweet 16. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more of Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick here with you up in Buffalo. We'll talk about the Predators a little bit in the next segment. They will get Ryan McDonough back tonight, it looks like, and they'll take on a Sabres team. Both teams coming off 7-0 losses. I don't know how much that ever happens in the league, but somebody is going to get 2 points tonight, and somebody's going to feel a lot better about things when this game ends tonight. We will see. But before we get to that, D-Mace, anything jump out at you from Nick McDevitt? One thing that hit me was the matchup of Florida Atlantic. Mm-hmm. Smaller players who can shoot for the Owls. That Tennessee, we know Tennessee guards the three about as well as anybody in the nation. They have the best defense in the country. So that's one thing. Can Florida Atlantic get the looks? And then can the undersized Florida Atlantic players rebound with Tennessee? I think those are two things in talking with Coach that jumped out to me as something to look for.
Well, I mean, for me, it was the UAB and Vanderbilt matchup, because when you look at UAB, you think, okay, Conference USA, Vandy should have this. They played the tougher schedule coming from the SEC. They've beaten Kentucky. You know, they've beaten just about any team. Tennessee, just about any team you want to name. So they should be the favorite, and they probably are. But when you start to hear Coach describe that UAB team with the transfers and a guard play, you know, them having the player of the year at UAB, I think he said it was last year's player of the year in their conference.
Yeah, and he's back this year.
And he's back here, yeah. So it's like, yeah, on the surface you look at it and say, yeah, Vandy should win this game coming from the SEC and what they were able to do, and their program is getting better. But then as you listen to Coach, how he describes UAB, it's like, oh, maybe I need to think about this again. This may be a tougher matchup. And with talking with Stack, he understood that this would be a tough matchup for his team headed Wednesday to play UAB here in Nashville. So it's not something that I know Coach Stackhouse doesn't realize about this UAB, but for me, considering I haven't seen much of them play, listening to Coach McDevitt describe this team, this is going to be a good one come Wednesday.
Yeah, I think they'll both be good. I agree with you, Derek. It's so easy for a fan and even for people like us to say, well, a Power 5 school should beat a Conference USA school. You know, you hear Vanderbilt or Tennessee, you're thinking SEC, UAB, Florida Atlantic, you know, Alphabet. You're like, those schools, they can't be that good.
Exactly.
But you heard Coach McDevitt say a lot of the guys on these teams are Power 5 transfers, right? They were recruited to the Power 5s, but they transferred to these schools. Or, you know, maybe they were undervalued coming out of high school. You mentioned Jordan Walker, player of the year last year. His nickname is Jelly. Right, he is okay. So the matchup between Jelly Walker and Ezra Mignon is going to be great, because one thing Ezra Mignon can do, and you've watched him, he can really put heat on the ball handler.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Walker, it's going to be a great one-on-one matchup. And you heard Coach McDevitt talk about what Andy Kennedy is going to try to do to free him up. You know, the coverage on the ball screens and things like that.
Do you think
that'll be something to watch?
Yeah. Do you think we will hear one of the announcers say, "Ezra got jellied by Walker"?
He could choose to do that. That
exactly.
Option will be there.
Shut
that
up.
Option will
Keep
be
your
there.
Mouth shut.
Hey, man, that was a good one. Come on, you got to give it up.
That was pretty good. That would be pretty good.
Oh,
but
man.
I do think that's the trap. probably for the teams too. Tennessee's probably sitting there, and Vanderbilt's like, well, you know, we should beat these guys. Mm-hmm. But I think you'll see that the line is not very big. I'm looking at KenPom. I don't know if there's a line out on the Vanderbilt UAB game, but they've got it close to a toss-up. Mm-hmm. Even though Vanderbilt's the host team, it's got KenPom's got 80-79 as his projected score, and I mm-hmm. think the Tennessee game is not that different against Florida Atlantic. Let's just take a look and see what they've got. I think I saw the line was about 5. In KenPom, it is 4, mm-hmm. 68-64. So expect a close game, and you can't let the stigma of a non-Power 5 name of a school fool you, because that's going to put you behind the eight ball. But I like Tennessee's – I think Tennessee's defense against Florida Atlantic will be the key. I don't think it'll be as easy for Florida Atlantic to get the looks that they're accustomed to, and I think that's where Tennessee's got the advantage to me.
Yeah, it's going to my thing is, because FAU is such a – they're a team that looks to shoot three-pointers, and if they're hitting them, as good as UT is at defending the three-point, it's going to put a lot of stress on them. That's why they end up beating Kentucky. Why? Because Kentucky couldn't make their three-pointers. And when you can't make your three-pointers, it doesn't open up lanes for you to drive. Teams are just going to give you them. You know, after a while, we saw it against Purdue against FAU. Listen, if you can't make your three-pointers, we're just going to give it to you, you know, which takes away the ability to drive to the basket. So it's going to be I'm waiting to see that part of the game, whether, you know, FAU is able to get off, not just get off, but make their three-pointers. And if they are, how will that disrupt Tennessee's defense, you know, during that game?
Yep. Tennessee holds opponents to 26.4% from three, number one in the country. Nobody is better at defending the three than Tennessee. So that will be the matchup that you should be watching for sure. When we come back, we'll break down the Predators and the Sabres from Buffalo. Let me start it by telling you about Loan Pronto. Loan Pronto wants you to know that if you've got things to address financially, you need some cash to do so, there's a great program that Loan Pronto has, and it's called the HELOC, the Home Equity Line of Credit. And so what they do is they make it the Express Equity Line of Credit. They can get this done for you in 7 to 10 days. And then a $50,000 loan would only cost you around $400 a month to pay back. And then you have that money to address the issues that are at hand. If you've got high interest credit cards, you can take that cash, get that credit card bill down to nothing. So forget about those 24% interest fees that maybe those credit cards have piled up on you. Don't lose money that way. Get that credit card number to zero. If you've got a car loan with a bad interest rate or anything else, you want to start a home improvement project, Loan Pronto can help you do that, and they can do it with the Express behind it. Loan Pronto's Express Equity Credit Line. Call now and find out more. 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. That's 615-499-5780 or loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender. NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
What do you want to see from this group in terms of a response against Buffalo?
Well, I think it's the bounce back. I mean, I got a lot of belief in the group tonight. Tonight wasn't good enough. I mean, yeah, I think you credit the Rangers. They're a very good team. They capitalize on their chances early. You know, we had some missed assignments and gave up some easy looks that they capitalized on. So I think it's the details of the game need to be there right from the start.
John Hines trying to get his team to bounce back after the tough loss to the New York Rangers 7-0 on Sunday night. And earlier on Sunday, it was the Boston Bruins whitewashing the Buffalo Sabres 7-0. So both of these teams trying to bounce back from rough, rough games. And you heard John Hines there talking about the start of the game. Nashville gave up goals on 6 consecutive shots. Maybe the goalies not quite as sharp. It's fair to say, not quite as sharp as they normally are. They have a higher standard. Plus, I don't think the Predators were quite ready for what they were going to see. Losing Roman Josi was probably a little bit of a blow to them. And the details, the energy, the sharpness that you have to play with to stay in a game against a team like the Rangers just wasn't there. And I think the Sabres would tell you the same thing. When you're trying to beat the Boston Bruins, you better bring it. And neither team did. So, D-Mace, this is one of those where, as an athlete, you gotta try to – you learn from it as quick as you can. You try to put it in the rear view, and you get that confidence level back up. Somebody's going to get a good confidence boost. I'm curious to see who scores first. Who comes out of the gate stronger tonight?
Well, hopefully it's the Nashville Predators, because they've been on the losing end of the last, what, 6-7 games. And the last game was a doozy. But the good thing about this from a player standpoint, Willie, in we understand that, you know, the trades that they were made and the injuries that they're dealing with as a roster, you still got some young guys in there and some guys that they brought up that are playing for jobs. So with that being said, you just assume that they're going to come out and they're going to put their best foot forward. They're going to come out and they're going to play with energy. They've had a few days off now. So hopefully with young legs, they could come in and sort of pick up where they left off of some games ago. And you can see that energy that we probably more than likely didn't see the last game versus the Rangers. So that's sort of looking at it from a cup half full, that you expect these younger guys to come out with some days off and show you that energy that they've shown you before. Because, again, they don't know what they don't know, and you just assume they go out there and they play with that energy that you need to play with in order to win games.
I agree. I think you need those young legs to play fast. That was something that John Hines told us this morning. He wants to get back to that tempo that has really helped them. They went on that 8-2-1 run since they're 0-2-1 in their last three, and maybe they've lost a little bit of the zip. And, of course, they've been losing more players. You know, you take Roman Josi out. Roman Josi is a guy that helps you play fast, right, because he can fly, and he energizes things from the blue line. They won't have him tonight. They will have Ryan McDonagh, it looks like, and that gives them one of those bedrock guys in their own end who helps put everybody in the right place. You know, he's a little bit like a Kevin Byard, right? He makes sure everybody's in the right spot. He's a leader. He's helping the younger guys. I think his presence on the ice and in the locker room will be a welcome sight for those guys tonight. And you're playing a Buffalo team, D-Mace, it's got a lot of the same things. They're going with young guys. You know, they were right on the cusp of a playoff spot a couple weeks ago, and they've hit the skids. They're 2-6-2 in their last 10, and they've gone from right on the edge of making it to the playoffs to, now they're going to have a huge finish to get there, and it doesn't look good for them. And this would be 12 straight years of missing the playoffs. So when you're saying, hey, our team should blow it up, let's rebuild and start from scratch, let's get the high first-round picks. Well, the Sabres are an example of that not working. And I do think in the next year or two, they're now starting to finally get a good foundation, and I think they are going to be very good for the next few years, but it has taken a long, long time.
Now, Willie, what I wanted to ask you, and I was thinking about this the other day, because I look at it from, you know, the standpoint of, you know, football, basketball, when you're injured, and maybe even baseball, when you're injured, if you know you're not going to play, a lot of times guys still travel with the team and they're on the sidelines. And I know it's different in hockey. There's not quite a sideline, but they're on the sidelines, and if they need to give some encouragement or if they need to give some tips to a especially a younger guy, when they come to the bench, you can say, hey, listen, think about this. I saw this. You may want to do this. Is it like that in hockey? Because I never really paid attention. Is it, or is it, you know, if guys are injured, they're typically not dressing unless there's a possibility of them playing that night.
Yeah, they're not going to dress because you can only dress 20 skaters for the game, or 20 players, 18 skaters, two goalies is the customer. You can, I guess you can dress three goalies if you want, but you're not going to dress guys that aren't going to play.
But are they on the bench?
Yeah, see, that's a great question, because I thought the same thing. I remember when I first saw that injured players weren't on road trips, I was thinking, well, why aren't they here? You know, but that's usually what they do, is they stay home and they get the treatment at home. Most of the time, there are times where injured players do go along. They'll get their physical therapy stuff with the trainers on the road. They want to be around the team, but by and large, you don't go on a road trip unless there's a chance that you're going to play at some point along the road trip. That's why a lot of people who cover teams that are trying to get whatever injury information they can are going to say, well, is so-and-so on the trip? Because if he's on the trip, then you're like, well, he might play. If he's not on the trip, you're like, well, he's not going to play on the trip most of the time. You know, but that is interesting, because you do, in the NFL, you see injured players on the sideline at games most of the time. True?
Yeah, no, you do. And a lot of times, you know, depending on the injury, it's usually, like, if it's a guy that you know is going to be out, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks, he may come to the home games, but he may not go to the, you know, away games. But then sometimes, you know, if he's going to miss that many weeks, he come to the home games and he come to away games, because he's also getting treatment while he's there, and then being around the guys too. So I didn't know.
You want to be
that,
around.
Yeah.
The guys.
I didn't know what that protocol was in hockey.
Yeah, they're definitely there for the home games, and they're around the guys there. But when the team goes on the road, typically injured players, unless it's a day-to-day thing, will not travel. So, and that, unfortunately for the Predators, has meant some of the core leaders who are still there, not the guys they traded away, but leaders, you know, like Philip Forsberg and Johansson and Alex Carrier, has become, you know, a guy that's graduating more and more into that core. And obviously Josi and McDonough, but McDonough back will help. There's no question about it. But you're facing a team tonight in the Sabres that got a lot of firepower. They score a lot and typically give up a lot. They sort of outgunned the Predators back in January, 5-3. And I was just trying to – my next thing as my preparation happens, I want to see how many guys who played for the Predators in that game back on January 14th are still there. I bet at least half of them are gone for trade or injury purposes. So this will be a very different look that Buffalo sees tonight from Nashville. But let's see if Nashville can get back on the right foot. And then they've got two games later this week against Seattle, and who knows what could happen. You got Thursday and Saturday against Seattle, and if you were somehow to win those two, it could be very interesting how things could swing in the standings. But first things first.
Yeah.
All right, let's say –
No, go ahead. First things first, beat the Sabres, man. Go ahead.
That's right. Only worry about the Sabres tonight.
Absolutely.
All right. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with D-Mace. We'll recap what's been going on throughout the day. We'll look ahead to see what Stillman and company have in store for you this afternoon. Caroline will be back with us tomorrow, and the three of us will be reunited in the studio for the first time this week, so we're looking forward to that. Stay tuned. More coming as we wrap things up. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Wrapping things up here on the show, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. And we have had, once again, the spirited conversation. Chase McKay, we appreciate him stepping in and helping us out. We've had great conversations today with Jerry Stackhouse and with Nick McDevitt as Coach Stack gets ready for round three in the NIT. Coach McDevitt giving us insight on the two Conference USA opponents that Middle Tennessee beat that are playing the local SEC teams. You've got Florida Atlantic against Tennessee in the Sweet 16, UAB at Memorial Gym tomorrow night against Vanderbilt. But another thing that we've hit on, once again, a really hot topic, the state of the Titans, what will happen with the roster. And D-Mace, we've had some really good discussion, I think, on you know, just breaking down the choices that the Titans have, because they are choices, right? And it's tough choices with the salary cap, and very difficult ones when it comes to a guy as special as Kevin Byard.
Yeah, you know, whether you whether that decision is made this year or next year, the decision will be made. And it's either, you know, we work out a new deal, you take a pay cut, or, you know, we try to figure out some alternative. Because I do believe Byard wants to stay here. He's said it. He's made it known. But also he understands that, yeah, I like to stay here, but, you know, I shouldn't have to be the one that takes a pay cut, considering my play hasn't dipped to a point where, you know, it's warranted. And he's exactly right. But, you know, I understand both sides of it. I don't try to get into, you know, just one side or not. I always try to, you know, see both sides of a situation and then sort of make a decision based upon that. But as a former player, I understand where Byard stands. His play hasn't dropped. And you gave him the contract, whether you were a part of the renegotiation of the contract or not, the contract is there. He's played to that level, so he should be warranted that money. But I understand it from an organization standpoint. Hey, listen, yeah, that we understand that's your contract. I wasn't the one that chose to, you know, kick the can down the road. We potentially are going, you know, in another direction, not necessarily from a player standpoint, but from a finance standpoint. And yes, you are playing well, but we still would like for you to take a pay cut because we know that you are closer to retiring than you're not. So I understand both parts of it. And this Titan team, they are trying to put themselves in a position where they know the dip is coming, whether the dip started this year or not. They know the dip is coming. They're just trying to make sure they're in a perfect position where it doesn't fall off, like the wheels don't fall off, period. But we're still in a position to add players and make our team better. And like I said, one of those scenarios could be moving on eventually from Kevin Byard, from Derrick Henry, and ultimately from Ryan Tannehill.
Yes, I think those are the three that you have to make difficult choices on. And the choice might be to stand pat.
Yeah,
the choice
it could
might be to stand pat, or you find a way to work things out. Mm-hmm. And I asked the question earlier because we were talking about the signing today of Adam Thielen for the Carolina Panthers. What happened with Adam Thielen? He's been a longtime member of the Vikings, mm-hmm. right? A core guy who's had a ton of success. They asked him to take a pay cut. He said no. They set him free, and he had a decent market for himself. It's, you know, it's nothing huge, but he's going to make, what, at least $9 million guaranteed mm-hmm. This year. I think maybe 14 is guaranteed total. Mm-hmm. So he's still got some value for sure. I can understand from the Vikings standpoint, they got Justin Jefferson, and they've mm-hmm. got some other guys that have probably passed him up and are a lot cheaper. I wonder how many times the veteran has over the years, whoever you're talking about, how many times do they say, okay, I'll take the pay cut. What do you have in mind? Mm-hmm. It usually doesn't happen that way, right? Because usually it does come to a head. So I just think you have to prepare yourself for a lot of different ways that this could sort itself out this year.
And it can go, you know, whether it be Derrick Henry or Kevin Byard. I think, you know, you still can. There's more, obviously, what this, the old saying is there's more than one way to skin a cat or whatnot.
Yep.
But if indeed this is about not wanting to take a pay cut and you feel that you're worth the money that they're going to pay you and you let them make that decision, if indeed they do let you go, I believe in my heart that Kevin Byard, he's owed $16 million this year, somewhere around there. He will get it on another team, but he will get it in a form of a base salary combined with a signing bonus. So together, both of those, he will still get the same amount of money he was going to get here in Nashville.
Good stuff. We'll talk more about it as we continue to follow it. Also, just noticing, just scrolling Twitter, some of the odds makers. Now, I'd never understand what this means, but Lamar Jackson is showing up on the Titans, I should say, are showing up on the odds for Lamar Jackson in a new home. I still think it's going to be the Ravens.
Yeah,
there's
me
no
too.
Way he's coming to the Titans. I don't know why they would be showing up, but just food for thought. We'll see if Jared tackles that. Stillman and Company coming up next. The three of us will be back together in studio tomorrow. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. So we're done for the day. Predators and Sabres later tonight. D-Mace, nice talking to you.
Peace, Willie.